Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
President Obama spent a few minutes this past weekend speaking to Tehran.
I do want to once again speak directly to the Iranian people. You, especially young Iranians, have the opportunity to begin building new ties with the world. We have a rare chance to pursue a new path. A different, better future that delivers progress for both our peoples and the wider world. That's the opportunity before the Iranian people. We need to take advantage of that.
The major components of the Iran nuclear deal were satisfied, and the U.S. and the international community lifted sanctions on Iran, some that had been in place for more than 30 years. At the same time, four American Iranians were freed in a prisoner swap as part of the deal, among them Washington Post reporter Jason Rezaian. What does all this mean for Iranians anxious to restore connections between the U.S. and Iran? Shaheen Armin joins us from Tehran. He moved from Michigan back to Iran to be an entrepreneur. Shaheen, how will the lifting of sanctions affect you?
There is a great deal of anticipation here right now. Everybody feels that hopefully things will improve in Iran. When I came back here 3 years ago, by the time that my plane left the U.S. and by the time I landed here in Tehran, almost 24 hours later, the value of the currency, the Iranian currency, dropped by almost 60%. So when I landed here, there was a great deal of anxiety and among the people about what's going to happen. You know, these were the effects of sanctions and so many other things that was happening back 3 years ago. Now things have really changed. You know, it's Friday night. I was in this newly opened shopping mall in northern Tehran. And you couldn't believe it. The police actually stopped the traffic within a mile of this mall just to direct the flow of the cars and the people coming to see what's going on, you know, because the idea of a shopping mall is very new for Iranians.
What does this do to your art projects, your art deals, the deals you're trying to make to possibly even export Iranian cars to Iranians back here who are a little nostalgic about the goofy old Paycon?
Yes. Well, I just finished making a documentary about Paycon with my friend Sohrab Daryabandari, and the film was accepted at the Iran's International Documentary Film Festival back in December. We spent almost two years making this film, and Iran is a bit of a weird country. You know, there's a lot of contradiction here, and trying to understand Iran is sometimes probably difficult. So what we did is we tried to, with the story of the Paycon, we tried to review the past 50 years of Iran. The film is called Iran's Arrow, The Rise and Fall of Paycon. Paycon means arrow in Farsi. And it was a little unknown British car that was done by the Roots Group. And the car was introduced in Iran in 1967, and it really changed and transformed Iran in a big way.
Well, do you think John Kerry, Secretary of State, who's going to have to resolve and evaluate some of these contradictions in Iran, will be able to do so? And will these contradictions undermine the progress that you describe and that you can feel along with your young friends?
You know, John Kerry had a very tough job, so did the Iranian administration. They both worked really hard in the nuclear talks. You know, you have to give both credit because both sides, they were facing opposition, as you know, both in the U.S. and right here in Iran. So the talks are done. You know, the celebration was actually happened a few months ago when the talks were successful. So the announcement that the sanctions were lifted, there weren't like a lot of celebration in the streets or anything like that, because now people are waiting. Iranians are waiting to see what's going to happen next.
Well, $100 billion worth of sanctions coming off, that's got to end up in somebody's pocket besides in the government.
Well, that's what, you know, the average Iranians are hoping for. You know, we made this film during the sanctions. What we felt was the cost of living was just going up and up. And now it seems like this new wave of consumerism is starting. And understanding what this car did to Iran during those four decades that was produced is very important to understand Iran. I mean, if you want to do business with Iran, you got to understand Iran.
Shaheen Armin, thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
In Tehran, Shaheen Armin is an entrepreneur who moved back to his country from Michigan. It was a different kind of verification being talked about in Vienna, Austria over the weekend. As we mentioned, the Iranian nuclear deal went live, and while entrepreneurs in Iran can rejoice over the lifting of nearly all sanctions and the resumption of oil sales, an upbeat but cautious Secretary of State John Kerry explained how this lifting of sanctions is not the end of the matter.
Let me underscore. Verification remains, as it always has been, the backbone of this agreement. We welcome that Iran has followed through on the promises that it made. It has kept its word, and we will continue to do the same. But we will also remain vigilant in verifying Iran's compliance every hour of every day in the years ahead.
Four American Iranians being held prisoner were also released as part of this deal, something of a chilling reminder of why the sanctions were imposed in the first place back in November of 1979.
Our position must be clear. I am ordering that we discontinue purchasing of any oil from Iran for delivery to this country.
That's President Jimmy Carter imposing the first sanctions in the midst of the hostage crisis 35 years ago. Nicholas Burns is the former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs under President George W. Bush. He has, at best, a cautious welcome to the prisoner release and the lifting of these economic sanctions.
I think the problem we're going to have with Iran is we're dealing with two governments there. There is a reformist part of the government, but the Revolutionary Guard, and this is a group of very tough-minded, very cynical military leaders who report to the Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei, they're the people who are taking our Navy on in the Gulf. They're the people who are funding the wars, funding Hezbollah, funding President Assad in Syria, funding the Houthi rebels in Yemen. We need to push back against that part of the Iranian government. I don't mean in a warlike fashion, but be tough-minded in trying to contain them. And so I was very disappointed that they took our sailors captive, very disappointed they forced the apology. And this is not a friendly government, far from it. So I think some people are saying there's going to be a rapprochement between the United States and Iran. I don't see it coming yet.
Although, does this mark the shift between the U.S. relationship between Saudi Arabia as being the preeminent Middle Eastern relationship, taking Israel out of the question for a moment, and that Iran now is sort of the main relationship in the region? And of course, we have to notice that the Saudis have cut diplomatic ties with Iran.
I think the United States, you know, we have so many interests in the Middle East. We're going to have many points of contact. Egypt certainly continues to be a primary American partner. Turkey, a European country, but also a country with profound Middle East connections. You mentioned Israel. I don't think this diminishes the U.S.-Saudi relationship. In fact, the Saudi foreign minister has said very recently he wants to reconnect with the United States. We need a strong and stable Saudi Arabia. It's a very difficult ally because we have so many differences with them. Iran would like to become the most powerful country in the Middle East. That's the ambition of the Islamic Republic. They'd like to do that through military force in places like Yemen, Iraq, and Syria, and they want to do it politically. It's in our interest to talk to them. It's in our interest to work with them. It's in our interest to see if they can be part and challenge them to be part of the solution in ending the Syria war. But I don't think we should be under any illusions about what that government is. It has a reformist veneer, but it has a hardcore, cynical, anti-American center to it in the Supreme Leader and in the Revolutionary Guard. And this is the dichotomy and the real difficulty of balancing interests in diplomacy when you need to connect with an adversary, as Secretary Kerry has done so effectively. I think there's going to be a duality to the American approach. We're going to gingerly try to step forward and have a more mature, consistent relationship with Iran. And at the same time, Iran's going to be a problem for the United States. So this is a transition point. And we've seen nothing like this since 1979 when we broke relations with Iran.
We've gone from Ayatollah Khomeini to Supreme Leader Khamenei. But in the same 35-year period, there have been many more presidents. Would you say that Khamenei, who may not be long for this world, is the last Supreme Leader? Is there someone in the offing? Is the Supreme Leader mechanism going to have to go for there to be serious political reform in Iran?
Well, there's no indication that the Iranians will change their basic governing structure, which is that the Supreme Leader sits at the top of the government and has a tremendous authority to make the big decisions. And Khamenei, the current supreme leader, is resolutely anti-American. He's a bit of a recluse. He doesn't travel. He doesn't meet many world leaders. I don't believe he's ever met a senior American leader. He seems to believe that the United States is at the root of all the problems in the Middle East. He's mistaken in that. So until he passes from the scene, I think he's a brake on any kind of dramatic improvement in relations between the United States and Iran.
There's the pattern of pendulum swinging from hardline to apparent openness to there is no openness, back and forth for these 35 years. What assurance do we need internally that this is, in fact, a trend line that will stick as opposed to this oscillating cycle of ups and downs?
Well, we have an opportunity between two countries that have been divorced from each other since 79 now to repair some of those divisions, to establish, and this is the elementary level of diplomacy, establish communications between our Secretary of State and their foreign minister. That's happening. Now I think, since the Iranians, in my view, have been consistent troublemakers, violent troublemakers in the Middle East, they need to reassure us that that page of their history will come to an end. I'm not so sure they're willing to do that. And the really difficult challenge for President Obama and for his successor will be, how do you balance those areas where we can work with the Iranians and those where we have to guard against Iranian actions if they continue to fund the most radical elements, terrorist groups and rebel groups that are tearing the Middle East apart? So I think you're going to see a kind of a forward-backward quality to our relations with Iran. There'll be some positive features. There'll be some negative features because the Iranian government is split. It's divided between reformers and reactionaries. I don't know who's going to win that power struggle.
Nicholas Burns, former American diplomat, professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, currently on leave at Stanford University. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.